Rich Kimball here with you, and on the other end of the G&M Family Market phone line, we welcome to the show from the Boston Globe and the host of the fantastic Bob Ryan's podcast, but Bob Ryan himself. Happy New Year to you, sir.
Well, thank you. Same to you and everyone up in Maine.
Great to have you on with us. Busy time of year in sports. And last night, one of the best college football games, one of the most entertaining games you could ever hope to watch last night. What did you think of the game? And also, what do you think, Bob, of that college football overtime rule?
I love games where there's surges and counter surges. I love comebacks. And that game, of course, gave us a little bit of everything. We had the dominance early of Oklahoma, and then we had Georgia finally figured them out and shutting them down the second half. And then we had the back and forth and the great plays that were made. I think there were far more positive acts than negative acts. You always need some negative acts to have a great game, but it was wonderful. College overtime. I'm not crazy about it. I think that there ought to be a way. You can devise a way to give to play more football and have each team. I think here's the soundest solution. I'm not going to take credit for it. I am adopting a bandwagon instead of, and I don't see why this isn't accepted, which is don't start on the 25, start on the 50. Make it that way, but start it on the 50 and have to make it so the team has to work to at least get into field goal range. Because they're already in field goal range when it starts. And if they don't gain it down, they got a 42-yard field goal attempt coming. So that would be my recommendation, and I really think that makes a lot of sense.
Boston Celtics hit the end of the calendar year with 30 wins in 40 games, but as you wrote in the Sunday Globe, but don't get too caught up in all of this, that the team could still use what you described as someone who lists their occupation as registered professional jump shooter.
Yeah, I really believe that. I felt that way before the season, and now we've seen it unfold. Marcus Morris can perform that task to a point, but he's not what I'm thinking about. He's all they've got right now in terms of a semi-reliable scoring touch off the bench, and that's assuming that you continue to bring him off the bench and not go another and go another option. But I think that's the case. And of course, the rebounding, which was a problem last year, which was a worry. They didn't seem to address it other than Aaron Baines in the offseason, which seemed to be cured a little bit during the streak, but it's become a recurrent problem of late. They aren't a very good rebounding team. I think that I don't think that now that the dust has settled, and you notice Mr. DeRozan had 52 points last night, that there's still much to choose among Boston, Washington, and Toronto. I don't think there's a whole lot of difference among those teams. There wasn't at the end of last year, and I don't think there's a lot this year. Look at what Bradley Beal is doing lately, too. The both of those teams are totally confident against the Boston Celtics. I think if you round robin those three teams, that you might have a different outcome three different times. I still think that they need to get a little bit better to catch up to what I think Cleveland will be in the spring.
And if it's possible for LeBron James to do anything quietly, is maybe his greatest season yet flying under the radar a little bit?
It is, because when you get to that level of greatness, there is a tendency to take people for granted. His rebounding totals, his assist totals are his highest ever. It would put him as the greatest passing forward statistically, although I still insist that Bird was a better all-around passer than LeBron. But particularly LeBron getting the benefit, as all assist guys do today, with the three-point shot factor, which is just tucking over the game. And you can get an assist on a pass to a guy to shoot from 25 feet out, which is not what Tricky Dick McGuire ever dreamed of, I can tell you that. So it's a little different world in terms of the numbers. The numbers are skewed a little bit. But he's wonderful. I'm a member of the fan club. I love watching him play. I admire him, and you're right. He's probably being a little bit taken for granted outside of Cleveland.
For those people who are maybe just now warming up to the college basketball season, who are a couple of teams that we should keep our eyes on if we haven't been watching them yet?
Well, I was going to say Butler, except they knocked off Villanova and showed people that. I haven't had a chance to get into it too much, so I'm going to be very cautious here. I'm delayed in my plunging into the college. In fact, I was looking forward to tonight. There's a schedule. There aren't any great market matchups necessarily, but there's teams that I'm curious about that I want to take a look at tonight when I settle down in my favorite chair with my blue ribbon at my left elbow and my clicker in my right hand. And that's the way it's going to be. So, obviously the number one team is no shock. Michigan State's been a staple now for the whole duration of the Izzo era. So I don't have a favorite, a team that I'm targeting yet at all. And I don't think it's a strong year. I think it's a year. I don't think whoever is going to wind up winning it all is not going to be one of the top 15 or 20 teams of all time, quite frankly.
We're talking with Bob Ryan here on Downtown. The Red Sox have had a fairly quiet offseason, while the team south of them in New York has been very busy. Now, through his Red Sox tenure, Dave Dombrowski has been very proactive, but now he's in a situation where he's got to either be reactive or, it seems, be patient in dealing with the likes of Scott Boras. Do you think they'll find that big bat they need?
Well, I'm not going to guarantee it. If it's clear that they want Martinez, but they want him at a reasonable cost, and that means years and not the money. And we know that Scott Boras is always going for the jugular, and the assumption is he's looking for a 7-year contract for a 30-year-old player. And the history is getting worse and worse with these aging players. The Angels are on the hook for 4 more years of Pujols. The Yankees suffered at the end of A-Rod. There are other – Matt Kemp turned out to be a total disaster. And these things are evident. It's really going to be interesting to see who finally bites. And if it's not him, then who? I had hoped that maybe it would have been Santana, but no, the Phillies got him. Abreu is still out there if you want to trade for him, I think. But I don't think that they have the wherewithal any longer. The prime, they got one great prospect left on Michael Chavis, maybe. I don't think that would be enough to woo. They'd have enough to package to get Abreu. I don't know what they're going to do. I'm a little worried about it. I see the Yankees building up a monster team down there with not just two potential 50-homer guys, but maybe three with Sanchez and four who could hit 40, theoretically, with Gil Bird. So they're a little bit terrifying on paper.
Bob, we look at these two marquee franchises hiring managers without any major league managerial experience. Should we infer from that maybe experience is overrated in that job?
Well, what we know and learn is that it's a world now being dominated by statistically minded general managers, and this is becoming a growing trend in baseball. It all began with Billy Beane when he devalued the managerial job in Oakland with Art Howe, and now with Melvin, and others have. Although not that the A's ever won at all, but they did very well in their circumstance financially to do as well as they did with the so-called Moneyball thing. But the analytics are the big thing now, and manager is not considered to be as important. I dispute this. I think it's always the truth is somewhere in the middle. I don't think that Joe Maddon, who I think is the best manager, is unmindful of statistics at all. He's not. But he still believes in the eye test and gut feelings and hunches and reading people. And I do, too. I think Alex Cora is going to be able to combine both things. I think Terry Francona combines both things very nicely. He was the first manager, it was in Boston, that had a computer at his desk. I can tell you that. And we got used to the sight of him looking at that computer while we were walking into his office. In those days, we were still doing the press conferences in the office rather than in the media room that they now have. And that's the trend. There's no question. I don't know where exactly Aaron Boone fits into all this, because we only know him now as a commentator since he retired. Apparently he blew people away in the interview. I know he's a bright guy, but it's not that old grizzled, Joe Morgan, 6'2" and even. Those days are gone.
I know the podcast is on a little hiatus. New episodes come out in early February, but this is a great time for people who might have missed any episodes to catch up through the website, through iTunes as well. And you've had so many phenomenal conversations on that podcast.
Well, that's very nice of you to say that. I've enjoyed it immensely. I didn't know how it was going to go. I was a little worried about about what I would be able to bring to the table with some of the people. Some people I knew better than others, and how to learn how to do what the stated goal of a podcast is. And it's not to have an interview. It's to have the listener get the feeling that he or she is eavesdropping on a conversation at the bar between these two people. And I'm trying to work and improve my skills to create that circumstance as much as possible. And I hope I learned a lot in the last year. But I have to tell you, Rich, it has been a lot of fun. I've been gratified with the people who've been willing to sit down with me for an hour and 15 minutes. And I hope I can come up with a good guest list for the next season, as we call them.
Well, it was so good. And we poached one of your guests because I enjoyed his appearance on the podcast so much. And we've had your friend Upton Bell on a couple of times with us in the last month.
Well, he's unique. You know, let's face it. Who else has a resume like his? It says, I was privileged to write a blurb on his book, President of the Creation. But when your mother was a Broadway star and your father was the commissioner of the National Football League, and you used to see Daddy make out the league schedule on your kitchen table, and that's the way you grew up. And you yourself were an excellent athlete who was a good basketball player at LaSalle. He's had a few experiences that are really unique to Upton Bell. So I really enjoyed his company. I've always liked Upton, and I'm looking forward to seeing him next week. He's having a book signing party in Boston at the Harvard bookstore in Cambridge. So I'm looking forward to seeing him. But you can't go wrong with Upton Bell.
Now, before we let you go, I have to ask you about this because I saw you mention it on social media. Tell us, if you can, about your experiences seeing SpongeBob SquarePants on Broadway.
Oh. Well, it's interesting. I have a grandson who is a huge fan. He's autistic, high-functioning autistic grandson who had declared previously in his life he never wanted to go to Broadway. Then he found out that there was going to be a play concerning his favorite television show. So I was able and lucky enough to score tickets. And I went, as dutiful grandpa. And then I read the reviews. And the play opened on the 4th of December, and to astonishingly great reviews, the kind of reviews that if you paid the reviewer $1 million, they couldn't have delivered better for you. And that includes Ben Brantley at the Times. So I said, well, maybe it's going to be good. I'm telling you now, Rich, and telling everybody. And first of all, it's not for kids. The kids are part of the deal. This is a sophisticated, hilarious, beautifully crafted, creative play, imaginative, funny, everything with great, with an excellent score. I'm not saying it's Oklahoma or South Pacific or West Side Story, but it's damn good. It's a very, very good score. And it's a great night or an afternoon, in our case, at the theater. And I'm telling you, I'll be stunned if it doesn't become the next Lion King, because I don't see how this thing can miss.
That's Bob Ryan with us here on Downtown. Bob, always a pleasure to talk with you again. Happy New Year to you and your family. Thanks so much for being with us this afternoon.
Hey, thanks for having me as always, Rich. Bye-bye.